Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us tonight, and best wishes. I hope that they get released soon so they're able to end their hunger strike.
Me too.
All right, thank you. Have a good
You.
night.
You too. Bye.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the virtual Obon Fest at Oregon Buddhist Temple on Saturday, August 1st from 7 to 8 p.m., streaming online. Obon Fest is a celebration of the Japanese holiday that honors one's ancestors through community rituals, song, and dance. This annual Portland event will be held online this year with dances to follow along with and memorializing of those who have passed. People of all backgrounds are invited to participate and dance along. Again, that's the virtual Obon Fest at Oregon Buddhist Temple on Saturday, August 1st from 7 to 8 p.m., streaming online. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
D Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. Portland, the city that is north of the great state of California, has been in the center of a storm. This is the place that we've seen federal agents come through, snatch up people, unmarked vehicles, the whole nine. Something out of a totalitarian movie is playing out in real time. Wanted to talk to a longtime activist and also a pretty damn good MC and artist. His name is Mike Crenshaw, to find out what's going on. Mike, we were just talking off air, and you said you thought this was going to be about 10 or 15 years into the future. You didn't expect to see what you're seeing in your fair city this quickly and with this much venom.
Nah, brother. I mean, you know, we've been talking about, you know, the escalation of fascist tactics from our federal government and from local police agencies for decades. You know, those of us who are black, those of us who are indigenous, those of us who are radical to revolutionary and have been on the front lines, we've always known that violence and escalating repression is part of the tactic. But to see it show up the way it reared its head in the wake of George Floyd, and specifically with the like you said, the goon squads and unidentified unmarked cars snatching people off the street, it actually did surprise me. I hate to admit it. Even though I've been talking about it in my rhymes forever, it surprised me that it was like happening downtown in the city that I live in on a day-to-day basis.
For people who don't know, describe what's going on and what we haven't seen. It's been very sensationalized in the mainstream coverage, but the narrative is that Antifa is up in the streets, they're breaking windows, and in order to bring law and order back to the fair city of Portland, we have to send in troops. But we know that that is not the narrative, and there's a lot of different layers we need to look at. So from your vantage point as somebody who's out there, who's been in the scene for a long time, what are they overlooking or not talking about that we need to know?
So first of all, it's a battle of narratives. Right now, you have what's actually happening on the ground from a correct narrative, and then you have what some of the people in the main media are doing to spin the narrative in favor of Donald Trump and his administration and the narrative they're trying to push. The narrative they're trying to push is one that paints the protesters as violent terrorists, okay, or an anarchist mob. Those are two different terms they've been using. Fact of the matter is, if we really deconstruct what they mean and what we're actually talking about when they say violence, they're talking specifically about property damage. They're talking about graffiti, and they're talking about maybe some broken windows, and they're calling that violence. The reality of the matter is, what the police, the Portland Police Bureau, as well as these federal agents have done in response to a small group of people who vandalized some property, what they've done in response is to fire less lethal projectiles at people. They're shooting people in the head, y'all. A few people have been shot in the head, had to go through reconstructive surgery, could have been killed. These things have impacted people's cranium through the helmets that they were wearing. And they've been shot at close range, from point-blank range, in the head, in the face. This isn't just happening in Portland. It's been happening nationally. I heard there was a gentleman down in California who actually lost his reproductive capacity because they shot him point-blank in the groin. So they're intentionally hurting people. That's, when we talk about violence, we're talking about harm to human life and the human bodies, not damage to property. The other thing they've been doing is they've been firing profuse amounts of different grades of tear gas. Now, in a pandemic where we know that the majority of the manifestations of the COVID-19 virus have resulted in potentially lethal respiratory issues, okay, in a global pandemic in which there are national stay-at-home orders globally, you're going to fire rounds of something that disrupts people's respiratory capacity, that makes them have to breathe deeper and cough harder. And they've been using this every night for almost 60 nights. So what I'm saying is, the violence that's intentional, that's not from just firing rounds at people's heads and groins and actually hitting them, but also the violence that's because of this weapon, this gas weapon that's actually been banned by the Geneva Convention in wars, it's something that's not only done with the will to harm people, but it's something that's exacerbated by this pandemic.
Let me ask you this. There's another layer to what's going on in Portland as well. And we've had you on in the past to talk about, there's always been a white supremacist movement that is there. And that white supremacist movement has been counteracted with the quote-unquote anarchist mob, you know, with quote-unquote the Antifa, communists, leftists, whatever name they want to give. But that has been vigorously opposed. And so what we're hearing is that those white supremacists, those neo-Nazis and what have you, have been emboldened and in some places have been in lockstep with the police. Can you clarify what's going on with that aspect of the struggle?
Yeah, so all of this, you know, there have been people who will look at the prize to get the feds out of Portland. And they'll look at white leftists, white radicals, people who could identify as socialists or communists or even anarchists as far as their political ideology and orientation. They'll look at those people and they'll say, well, they're still in our movement. This should be about the movement for black lives. Why are all these white people doing this? But what I'm here to say is that there are intersections between anti-establishment movements, okay, and the movement for black lives. We have to remember that all of this started with the murder of black people and the outcries against the murder of black people by the police. The police have been bolstered in their response, which has been to increase violence, to increase intimidation, and to increase repression. The police have been bolstered by the federal government. So what we have is we have not only a local and state response, but we have a federal response, which is on the side of white supremacist violence. If we look back to the founding of this country and what was going on, we had the chattel slavery of displaced, forcibly displaced and stolen African people who were used as free labor. Without that free labor, the wealth that was consolidated to create the society and civilization we live in would not have come into existence. It was imperative for our bodies and our lives and our destinies to be controlled, and violence was the means with which they controlled what we were able to do, our freedom of movement, our right to live and die. That said, the police forces that came from the slave patrols in the South to capture insurrectionary slaves who were trying to escape to liberation evolved into the police forces that patrol our streets today. So there is a direct link between the way black people are treated by police and the state response, be it a federal state response or be it a local state response. It's all about the control of the freedom and the destiny of our body that stems from the fact that we were captured and enslaved and used to create wealth for them. So to me, there's no difference between what's happening in the streets today and what we have dealt with historically as black people trying to survive white supremacist violence. That said, when white people want to come out because they identify that they have a class interest, a common set of goals, some ideological comparisons to what we believe in our struggle to be free and to be liberated, then we want to have those white people with us. They don't always do it in the same ways that we do it because they have a different lived experience, different privilege, different entitlement. But when they can identify that the root causes of oppression are things that are a threat to all of us, then I say, bring them out. And I do also believe, Davey, I believe that the federal government picked Portland first because of how white Portland is demographically and because the large number of radical white people who are out here in the streets in support of the movement for black lives. And I believe that the violence and repression that they're unleashing on those crowds has a lot to do with their desire to intimidate white people away, to push them away from being in the movement and in solidarity with black people and other people of color.
Wow, that's something to definitely think about. And, you know, you talk about class difference, and we've had people like Kali Nkuno from Cooperation Jackson and others on that said, Ajumo Baraka is another one, that talked about we have to be very careful about the black class differences that will show up. As you're speaking, what you're saying, we have the NAACP talking about, well, this is just a white spectacle and they need to fall back. We, you know, but this is also the same NAACP that was standing on the side of wanting to not have rent control in California, right? So how do we kind of make sense of this? Because that word means something to a lot of people, but then a lot of times the views are very conservative, even as they may do some good work that we can get behind. It gets confusing because that was the headline. NAACP in Portland says this is white spectacle, and that's not what you're saying right here very eloquently and with receipts to back it up.
And let me say this, man. Organizations like the NAACP have had points of view about the advancement of colored people, you know, as is spelled out in the acronym, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Black people at one time were called colored people. But the advancement of colored people in that cause and the way that it's been framed and characterized historically by the NAACP is something that is based more on reform-oriented social change that can incrementally improve the livelihood of black folks in the society by bringing them closer to equal as far as the things that white people and the privileges that white people and the rights that white people so freely enjoy. I think the goal was to get us placed in society where we enjoy the same privileges and we're treated the same way as white people were thinking, or the same way that white people were being treated and experiencing life. But I think that there's a difference between radical revolutionary politics and goals and orientation and reformist goals and politics and orientation. In the radical revolutionary framework, what we want to do is we want to see the end of all these systems of oppression. And while we're pushing for the end, we can accept the diversity of tactics and we can support and get behind our people who are reformists and want to create incremental change because it seems more practical on certain levels to give people something that they can stomach, something that won't be too fat, something that will allow us to say, defund the police and redistribute those funds towards social services as opposed to abolishing the police quickly, because people feel like if you were to abolish the police overnight, then a wave of crime would overcome the nation and it would be less safe. It would be more of a dangerous place to live in. But what we're saying on the revolutionary side of things is that we have to look towards abolishment of the prison industrial complex, abolishment of these police forces, because even if it doesn't happen today, David D., it's got to happen in our lifetimes. And that's what we have to work for. The same way that people like Harriet Tubman and Nat Turner made decisions that even though the odds were so great, they were still determined to reach liberation, even if they died in the process. We have to be willing to fight on that level for our freedom, because the things that are oppressing black people ultimately are the things that threaten all life and all existence on the planet Earth. So when we fight for black liberation from a revolutionary framework, we're fighting for all human rights and justice, for all people, for anti-oppression, to get to the root cause of all these systems that intersect and work together to oppress all of us. It just so happens that Native American people, Latinx people, and black people in the United States of America and many other places on earth are the most oppressed people. And it's this system that has come up, that has sprung into existence off of our multi-generational, centuries-long oppression that has created the current global civilization. So I understand and respect that some people feel like we got to work on one thing at a time. We can't let our struggle get hijacked by these other interests. But I'm also saying that true revolutionaries understand that we have to change everything about this system. We have to do away with all of it. And we have to work for it like it can happen in our lifetimes, even if it takes decades.
That is definitely something that should resonate with a lot of people this afternoon, Mike Crenshaw. Mike, our time is short, and we appreciate you taking time out. Are there any marching orders or anything that you want our listeners to do? And big shout out, because we're heard up there in Portland as well. Is there anything that you want our listeners to do to move this struggle forward?
Continue to support Cable Community Radio. If you're looking for organizations to support in Portland, Oregon, look out for Don't Shoot PDX. And I think you can find them at don'tshootpdx.org. If I'm wrong, then it's going to be don'tshootpdx.com. They're actually working with the ACLU to press the issue of human rights violations and civil rights violations for these people using the feds using this tear gas and the police using this tear gas. And there are people who are working to get some compensation to the people that have been injured by the tactics of the Portland Police Bureau, as well as these federal secret police that are out here. I want people to keep their eyes on the prize. This is a struggle for black lives. Black Liberation Movement, Black Lives Matter, both of them are linked, BLM. And we need to understand that these, in origin, are revolutionary struggles that seek to end the oppression that is caused by white supremacy in concert with capitalism and patriarchy. There's more than one root cause of the troubles that we all face. And so just remember to keep your eyes on the big picture. The goal is to change and transform society to be a more just society. And there has to be a diversity of tactics. And last thing I want to say, David D., even if I disagree with some of the people's tactics, I'm not going to publicly disrespect. I'm not going to be on social media dogging out my people, man, because solidarity is what's going to get us through this. So even if I disagree, I'm going to handle that business offline.
Real talk. Mike Crenshaw, always principled. We appreciate that. We will be in touch, and we will talk to you again so you can share some more knowledge. Big shout out to everybody who checks us out in Portland. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program. Turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man. Chris Juwan Kim. Yeah. Innovation. Stimulating ill conversation. Anything else is just imitation. Simulation. Step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio. Let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right. Feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy, though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah.
Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah.
Help you. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they're ready for the steel gray beef. Say please, maybe it'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say peace to the lovers I name.
Real Talk Radio. You are now rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, girl.
East Coast.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. So much has transpired over the weekend as we saw more than 120 demonstrations throughout these United States in response to federal troops showing up in Portland and grabbing protesters, people who are fighting against police terrorism, being snatched off the street. The officers were in unmarked cars, had no identification that we could attribute as to what agency they were answering to and came from. And so there were a lot of demonstrations. There was some in Oakland, which we'll talk about, but one that really caught attention took place in the city of Austin. It was a place where, unfortunately, somebody was killed. And we wanted to get the backstory to it because, obviously, it becomes something of political fodder, and there's a lot of implications around that. Joining us from the city of Austin is Debbie Russell, local activist and a longtime friend of the show. Debbie, what's the scene like in Austin, if you can maybe paint a picture for us?
Well, there's a lot of mourning going on and grieving going on right now, but everybody's coming together. They're still have been coming out every night since the shooting Saturday night. At the site of the shooting now, everything's sort of transferred to that, which is at 4th and Congress Avenue, so in the shadow of the Capitol of Texas.
Let's backtrack a little and just remind people about the shooting itself.
So Saturday night, people were doing a Solidarity with Portland march, and took to the streets. And of course, we're doing all this stuff without permission and not permitted. So there's the people that say, well, you shouldn't be in the street. But of course, we're well beyond asking police for permission anymore, I believe. So people were in the street, but they were obeying the, cross the lights and doing everything right. There was a car that was eagerly trying to turn into the crowd, and everybody could see that. There's 3 or 4 videos now from different angles that show that the car sped up. You can hear screeching and turned into the crowd of protesters that were trying to cross the light. And everybody screamed, and people were kind of already on top of the car, and luckily no one got hit and hurt. And so at this point, we've had a few people here since the first weekend everything started nationwide, and police have been shooting at us and trying to kill us, essentially. So there's been people that have been packing and carrying, and one gentleman who is a libertarian, but is very distrustful of the police, and has been every day with his wife Whitney in a wheelchair protesting the police since all of this started in late May. And he had an AK-47 around him. It was on his back at the time. He was pushing his wife's wheelchair so they could cross the intersection when this car pulled in. And so he immediately got in front of the wheelchair to protect her from pushing her back. And he started to move his gun around. And this new video shows he still had it pointed at the ground when shots rang out from inside the car. They targeted him specifically. They fired 5 shots. 3 of them hit Garrett Foster, and the other 2, we actually don't know where they went. They didn't hit anybody else. And then as he started to speed off, which if you look at this video, you'll see there was nobody actually blocking his car in the front. So this defense thing that people are claiming that he had to shoot for defense reasons, he had every opportunity to go through and continue on with his car, but he chose instead to shoot. He rolled down his window to do that. And so it was horrific. I was watching it live on Hiram Stream, Hiram Garcia, who has been our constant live streamer since day one. I'm sorry, I'm going to start crying. I haven't slept in 3 days.
No, I understand.
And he started to drive off, and another protester who happens to also be a medic, but not officially with our street medics, was also had a gun and shot at the car 3 times, and I obviously didn't hit anything, hit the person. Right now, we know who the person is. Officially, the community is not naming him because we are doing a lot of more digging to confirm a lot more aspects of this story, which is bigger and deeper than who this horrific, very person is.
I understand, Debbie, and I appreciate you taking time to talk with us. First, we should never take death lightly, and I think when we cover these occasions, that first of all, many people are out in the streets because of a death. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Austin has had a couple since then that you all have been protesting against. So there's that trauma of people being shot and killed by police alone. The second thing I think we need to keep in mind is that, and the reason why we were talking with Debbie is because this is maybe the third or fourth show where people outside of the police agency who have resentment, anger, or some other issue with people protesting have attacked them. So we've covered the situation in New Mexico where there were white supremacists that shot somebody. We know what happened in Virginia. We saw that this was happening in Minneapolis, where now cars have been used as a weapon of choice of running into people. Right here in Oakland, we saw this. So at this point, we're looking at 7 or 8 different incidents where people who are watching a protest, who come up on a protest, have decided that it's okay for them to drive in and hit people. In this case, you had a black woman who's in a wheelchair who is married to Garrett Foster, or Foster Garrett, I believe.
Garrett Foster. Actually, they were still engaged, which is unfortunate. She won't be able to get his benefits.
Yes.
He's a vet.
He's an Army vet. So this is happening, and we can't just attribute this to an isolated incident. We can't look at this and say this is just an accident. This seems to be a little bit more well-coordinated, which I guess is what you're alluding to as to why you all are digging a lot deeper into this. That's one aspect.
The fifth incident in Austin that I know of, and one of which was an off-duty cop, and one of which was the son of a small-town Maine police chief who pulled over to the police station garage right after he tried to run people over and pulled out his gun and pointed it at them, got out, the police came out, got the gun from his car. He went into the garage with the police that were in there. He got out, went in, the police came and got his gun and then moved his car in the garage, and then 15 minutes later, he left in his car and went home, never charged. His name is Logan Buckman. And so this is not the first time that they tried it here. And there are some police connections. I'm just going to leave it there at the moment until we know more.
You mentioned, and we also shouldn't push this aside as to why people are armed. Now, in California, where there's different gun rules, you know, that may sound like a foreign entity, but in places like Louisiana and Texas and what have you, people do carry on the regular. But you've also mentioned that protesters have been shot at on several occasions. So this obviously would be common sense in a Texas point of view to make sure that there is an added layer of protection. Am I right or wrong in understanding that?
Yeah, and so, of course, you know, the people that support gun rights are now supporting only the gun right of the murderer in Texas, and yet the open carry guy had a legal gun, and it's legal to carry a long gun without a permit anyway. So a lot of people are not seeing that he had that right to protect his wife in a wheelchair from these events that are occurring nearly daily nationwide.
He was a veteran, Garrett Foster.
Correct.
What's been the reaction from that community, considering that one of the reasons why we had these responses was seeing the pummeling of a vet in Portland, you know,
Portland,
which,
yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of vets saw that, and it was a visceral reaction.
Veteran community's been fairly quiet on it currently. Locally, of course, the vets here are all supporting Garrett. We've had a big split in the libertarian community, and the libertarians have been helping to promote this idea that not only did Garrett point his gun, but that he shot first, and that somehow in the 20 seconds between him being shot and lying on the ground bleeding, that people had time to pick up all his shell casings and all of this stuff. So the National Libertarian Party, to their end, sent out a national support message of Garrett. So they're trying to shut up their membership from going on the wrong side of history here.
What has been the response from the police with respect to this, and where do you see this movement at this point in time going forward, considering the amount of shootings that have taken place directed at protesters, you know, all around the country?
Well, the police here brought both the driver and our secondary shooter that shot at the driver in for questioning, and both were let go. Not charged, not arrested. Yes, the investigation is still ongoing, and yes, they can charge him. There's no statute on murder, but the biggest problem is here he drove into the crowd. He used his car as a weapon. He broke the law already before he ever rolled down his window, and they don't seem to care about that piece at all, and they're still trying to help set up the idea that Garrett pointed his gun. And so at this point, they sure look to be setting it up to where this guy's going to get away with murder. And so we're not going to let that happen, and they know that. And this is retaliation for the big changes that our city council is talking about in terms of defunding. And so they have already put out statements that they're not going to do anything but respond to violent calls. And we said, great, that's actually all we need you to do. they don't care about that. They're just going to let the violent offenders get away with murder if, in fact, those violent offenders are helping their cause.
So the city of Austin has voted to defund. Has the governor stepped in?
No, they have not voted anything. They are working on the budget right now, and they've taken a lot of testimony, and several of the council members are showing leadership and are pushing for some huge, big transformational changes. So we won't know until middle of August whether or not we get there. But the governor, he's not going to do anything in terms of helping to curb police brutality or police overreach in any way.
Before I let you go, Debbie, let me ask you this. The narrative that they like to paint is that it's Antifa. It's some underground left-wing communist, you know, socialist neo-Nazi. I mean, they literally will call them, you know, Antifa neo-Nazis. But we'll get to that later. considering that that's the exact opposite of what they stand for and what they're against. But that's been the narrative. But with the shooting of Garrett Foster, that changes it, a vet and a libertarian. And many times we look at libertarians and they could be on a conservative side of things and they can be on the more liberal side of things depending on the issue. So that changes the narrative in a very big way. How is that kind of playing out? Because this story, it's known, but it's not known. They're not really riding that wave the way that they would had it been somebody they could say, that's an anarchist, that's Antifa. No, this is a vet who is a libertarian. So now what?
Well, it's really playing out before our eyes. Now that we finally are getting some of these detractors to see this newest video that, I mean, really just came out today, where if you have the software to do it, you can stop it at the right point. You can see that Garrett did not raise his gun and, of course, never shot. You know, they're starting to come back around. So we'll see, hopefully, the narrative go towards, yeah, well, maybe it isn't all this one big glom of lefty, crazy, Antifa, comma, Inc., you know, Soros-funded people that are upset about the police. And so I'm hoping that in Garrett's name and in his memory that we see some unification.
What can people doing that are listening, what can they do to help in this cause? You know, what would you like them to know? What would you like them to do as we get ready to let you go?
Right now, make the connections. We need to connect all of our these happenings, the police setting us up for being murdered and letting people get away with it. We need to call our stories and call our information and call our movement to show the people that still aren't right there with us that this is a purposeful, malicious movement to undermine curbing and reining in police overreach, and that perhaps the problem really stems with the police. Perhaps that's really where the violence is actually coming from. And we just need to be more cautious and careful in our communications with these other people and really show facts and evidence, not get into flaming wars, try to be productive, and don't get caught up with the trolls. That's not all I've got right now.
Debbie, we appreciate that, and we appreciate because, you know, how you're feeling about this. And again, we don't want to take that lightly, just assume that, you know, you can just tuck away emotions and just speak to it and keep it moving, that we should reflect on this loss of life and what this is really doing to people that are witnessing it, that know some of the folks that are going through this, and remember that most people are out on the street because of the trauma of loss of life due to police terrorism. So, Debbie Russell, thank you so much from Austin, Texas, and we will be in touch, and we'll keep our eyes and ears peeled.
Sending my love. Thank you, Davey.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Bills pile up, sky high. send that boy off to die. Oh, make me wanna holler the way they do my life. Yeah, make me wanna holler the way they do my life. Setbacks, natural fact is, oh honey, then I can't pay my taxes. Oh, make me wanna holler and throw up both my hands. Yeah, and make me wanna holler and throw up both my hands. Oh, ow! Crime is increasing. Trigger happy.
Matter of history. When I was a young man, a boy, really, I found barbershops to be fascinating places, for there men gathered in an air of relaxed familiarity and discussed things they didn't do elsewhere. I heard tales of ancient African empires, of unknown roads of black history, and often the name of the brilliant self-taught historian, J.A. Rogers. I'd later search many a bookstore for his work, often without success. I thought of those days because of a little-known quote I'd read on the work of two late black scholars and historians, Ishaka Musa Barashango and Lerone Bennett. The quote was from Thomas Jefferson, president and slave owner, and it reflected his paradoxical nature. Said Jefferson of African slavery in America, 1 hour suffered under such conditions was fraught with more misery than ages of that suffered under the British by white Americans who rose in rebellion to oppose them. This is really a quite astounding statement by not only an American slave owner, but a revolutionary. It tells us all that Jefferson knew well the miseries inflicted by him and his class. One might even say he knew it intimately. If we take Jefferson seriously, he suggests something else. That blacks have a greater right to revolution than did British Americans under a foreign, distant king. Think on that. A little matter of history. From imprisoned nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as Joker?
What's wrong with your real name?
That's what you called me on the show. A Joker.
They must think it's a game. Well, I don't get it. I'm not quite entertained. They keep on laughing when I look in the frame. This is my show, so I send them the flames. Fire next time, I can end you today. You asking why? Cause police can't behave. They stomp on our necks and they sing to our pain. I hope this track bangs and bangs and bangs. I pledge allegiance to the murder of innocent. Black or brown, then your death is more imminent. Losing breath like a challenge with cinnamon. Police and racist men, I thought those were synonyms.
How could you say that? Times are way better than like way back. Get off your knee, just shut up and dribble, and you must remove that wave cap.
Whoa, look looks like I struck a nerve. Freedom of speech, so for me, is it just absurd? Cause I'm black, you want me to rest in dust or dirt? Money only reason you won't say that other word. But anyway, every day I tune in to the news and see the new abusement. Why they wanna tie us up? We the country's loosened. Can I say that I'm surprised they don't think I'm human? How many more gotta leave? How many mothers gotta grieve? This country been tearing me to pieces. Now I'm really thinking I should just leave. But black people's placement, there is no replacing. We should run the nation, we the chief of operation. Yeah, and I'm really just pissed off. Now I'm really finna lift off. Okay, if my name ain't take off, police don't know me, then the bullets only take off. Cause they spin the story like the brother try to take off. Then they get fired, right? Nah, they just take off. Do you see? Do you get how ridiculous? All that picking from my people, swear they wasn't picking this. So when you say blue lives, that's when I stop listening. The blue you treat as heroes, but the black you treating different. So when you hear me chanting that the black lives matter, it's only cause on the corners only black lives flattered. Hey, good cops dying too. Yeah, that's the truth. But listen, the difference, they signed to the risk. And when they go off duty, they recline from the As a black man, I cannot recline from the risk. Buying Skittles from the store, I might die for the But listen, the difference, they signed to the risk. And when they go off duty, they recline from the As a black man, I cannot recline from the risk. Buying Skittles from the store, I might die for the world racing, it's education or catastrophe. She's winning and it's disaster most emphatically. Everywhere I look, it ain't hard to find the ignorance. Police, no leash, Cooper, Zimmerman, sick of taking the high road. We losing oxygen, altitude and police choking our esophagus. Looking at a country, they just laughing, never stopping it. Wouldn't be surprised if the government was profiting. You thinking I'm a joke, wow, call me Joker. The end of Gotham City, yeah, coming closer. The waiting burns, weed in hell on our shoulders. Put my heart in a place quite colder. They telling us we're crazy, Arkham Asylum. I ain't joining with this government, the next step is fight them. Fight the powers that keep thinking they the tough man. Vigilante Batman, more like Ku Klux Klan. Nothing really changed since the days of old. Rich of dough, target the rich of soul. System broke, hoping we missed the note. COVID-19 blew the whistle hole. And I hope you know, I won't let this go. Even when this track is done and I'm past the post, I'ma fight for my rights till they set in stone. Batman, Joker, wreck the status quo.
Mike D, you can't do this to him, man.
You just don't go through with it. You say you know the way to go, and I should follow. But all of your empty promises leave me hollow. And oh, how do I trust you? Oakland, stand up.
Yeah.
Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Nine Wolves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard not when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat to the belly from the steel gray beef. Say please, maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say peace to their lovers, I need.
Real Talk Radio. You are now rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, girl.
East Coast.
Thank you.
OO Portland.